Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Chris on IMTM Worldwide Radio, and this is Around the ATL, first show of October. Can't believe it. Took a while for us to get back on the air. Sorry about that. Hopefully, we will be back in regular again for the rest of this season. It's a big year in sports for it, the city of Atlanta and the state of Georgia. 646-652-4479 is the number, of course. Let's make sure that everything is up and running. I think it is. We're going to find out. Before I get started, let me go ahead and do what we usually would do when we open up a show. Let me find, there we go. I do want to say thanks again to everybody who has supported us over the years. You know, we started, you know, 2018. And we've been going strong since then. We've had, you know, a lot of shows, a lot of great guests. You know, Dominique Wilkins, Hall of Famer, John Collins. He's on the Hawks currently, obviously, as a starter. We've had Jerome Jurinovich on most recently. We've had Bob Rathman and Steve Holman on several times. Hopefully, we'll be able to get them in right before the season starts. We're going to see how that works. And, of course, thanks for all the fans who have ever called or watched the show, listened to the show initially on Blog Talk Radio, to watching us here on YouTube and Facebook now. Of course, a lot of the pages that we've, myself and my co-host Jordan Jackson, have frequented over the years, New Pack City page, of course, Atlanta Hawks Nation, these are all on Facebook, the Atlanta Bird Game page, Falcons Nation, Savage Dogs of UGA, Atlanta Braves fan group, and many others. And, of course, everybody on Twitter that we interact with every single day. So thanks to everybody as far as that goes. Also, don't forget, subscribe to the IMTM Worldwide Radio page. You're watching it right now. You're listening right now. Go ahead, take 1 second it takes to hit the button. That way you'll get notifications on future shows. I'll go ahead and say it, tomorrow, 1 o'clock, we don't do a lot of day shows, but tomorrow we are. We have a special guest, Marvin Freeman, former Atlanta Braves pitcher, will be on the show. We're going to be talking about his time as a Brave, his career as a pitcher in the league, over a decade in the league. We're also going to talk about what he's been doing after baseball, where he's teaching new ones, the new generation, how to pitch. It's very inspiring when you actually just look at everything that he does specifically and how he talks about pitching and things of that nature. So we're going to talk to him about that, the foundation, and we're going to talk about, of course, the Atlanta Braves team of the current time and the playoffs currently. Make sure, if you have never listened to Around the ATL before, make sure you go back and listen on iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Spotify, Apple Podcasts. You can even call it up on Alexa, just say Around the ATL, and it will pull up. So we got that out of the way. Okay, I'm not sure what's going on. All right, let's see. Give me a pause, y'all. Got an emergency here. All right. So if you haven't noticed yet, we have a new shirt. I shouldn't say new shirt. It's the first shirt for Around the ATL. Around the ATL, the logo was created by a company called the Originative Brand. And that's the same email. And his name is Jamal Price. And I've been working with Jamal for a number of years now. He's designed many logos for me over a period of time. He designed the first Around the ATL logo, actually. So this is the new one. This one was created this year. And we have shirts. So if you see it, there it is, Around the ATL, All Sports, All Atlanta. And if you see there on the bottom of the screen, that's the page that you go to if you want to get anything style or custom-wise made that's sports-centric to Atlanta. Falcons, Braves, Hawks. He has a great championship shirt that represents the Braves. He has all kinds of just different items that you can purchase off of that page. Make sure you let them know that Around the ATL sent you. So go there and purchase you a shirt for the season upcoming for the basketball season, or get you a shirt for the football season. Get you a shirt for next year for other different sports that are Georgia-related and whatnot, but make sure you hit them up. Or you can even get you an Around the ATL shirt for yourself to support the show. So definitely do that. I'm going to leave this up for a little bit as I see if we can square away our co-host for tonight, because for some reason, the email is not going through, he's saying. Let's see if we can try it one more time. I'm trying not to take a commercial break right as the show is getting started. We haven't actually officially started yet, so I am going to see what I can do to keep this going. So tonight, we're going to be talking primarily about the Braves. Of course, the playoffs are going on right now currently. We're going to be talking about the Atlanta Hawks in the preseason. We know we've played three games so far, two in Abu Dhabi and one in Cleveland just last night. I don't know what to say, man. Let's see if I can email it to myself. We're going to be talking about UGA, of course, and their offensive struggles up to a point. They're still undefeated, but this has been, you know, a little bit of an issue, right? You know, but we are back in number one because Alabama struggled the other night, obviously. So, you know, we have Vanderbilt coming up, so we'll talk about that. And we have Florida, of course, coming up. So we'll get into that a little bit. We will talk about the worst call in NFL, maybe sports history as far as I'm concerned, the call of Grady Jarrett, and supposedly that was roughing the passer. You know, Stephen A. Smith used the word that we all know, egregious. It's the most egregious call you could ever possibly have, ever. So we're going to talk about that tonight as well. We're going to talk about Georgia Tech. We have to talk about Georgia Tech. Now, usually in our show, if you know our history, we kind of strive to never talk about Georgia Tech. But tonight we will. We have to, because since the coaching change, guess what? They're winning. They're competing. They're competitive. You know, and they're 2-3, I believe, right now. They actually have a shot to make a bowl. Believe it or not, as crazy as that sounds, and we'll talk about that a little bit as well. So I'm waiting for my co-host to join. Hopefully, we'll see if this works out. Let's see if I can. Well, I'll just let him know when he gets on. So let's do this. Because he has not come on just yet. We're trying to get our co-host onto the show. Something technical is wrong. I'm not sure it's an email thing. But, yeah, definitely. Hopefully y'all like the shirt. The shirt's pretty cool, right? Ah, there he is. Let's see if we can get this working now. Mr. Jackson. What's going on, Jordan?
What's going on, sir? I had to cut the YouTube off because I had you on the YouTube feed today. I was hearing double Chris at different times.
Uh-oh.
It was a little crazy there, but I think we got it under control now.
All right. Yeah, we don't want no duplicate echoes or anything like that, that's for sure.
Right.
I was just telling the audience, you know, we've been around for a while. I was showing off the shirt a little bit around the ATL, All Sports, All Atlanta, and also reminding them that tomorrow we got special guest Marvin Freeman, former pitcher of the Atlanta Braves, is going to be on the show tomorrow at 1 p.m., so definitely check that out. And again, we're going to be talking about Falcons. We're going to be talking about Hawks. You know, the schedule is coming up. We're a couple of days away from the beginning of the season, so everybody needs to be excited with the Hawks. We're going to talk about some of the rookies. I got a little video we're going to play. I found some video. So we're going to do that. And like I said, we're going to talk about that crazy call from last Sunday, Grady Jarrett. We're going to talk about that. But now we got Jordan on. Jordan, go ahead and give your intro and we'll get started.
Well, glad to be on the show. As always, man, there's so much going on in Atlanta sports, and it's certainly been quite a bit that's taken place since the last time we had a chance to chop it up on air and to talk to the people out there. I mean, you certainly hit on some of the key points going on. We got Braves in playoff mode. We got Hawks getting ready to crank back up again. We got the Falcons in the midst of a season in which, you know, it's certainly been some highs and lows so far. And just looking forward to seeing how it goes. Shout out to Jabal Price, the originator of Brandon. T-shirt looks nice. Hopefully I'll have mine here shortly. It is here. I just got to go by and pick it up to the address I had it mailed to. But it definitely looks good. I'm going to have to get Jabal to print me up a hat, one big enough to go over these dreads. Which is, I don't know, that's going to be a hard task because for some reason, like I already, even before I had the dreads, like when I wear a snapback cap,
uh-huh.
You know, some people can fasten like all of the back of the cap. Me, I can only fasten like the two at the end.
Oh, wow.
Like, you know, so I don't know if they still have, I'm going to talk with Jamal, if they still have a fitted cap, I need to measure my head and get the right size and get the logo on the fitted cap. That way I can wear around the ATL every single day if I have a cap. You know what I mean? With that being said, sir, like I said, it's an exciting time. Shout out to all the people on Atlanta Sports Twitter, Hawks Twitter, Falcons Twitter, Braves Twitter, Dream Twitter, Atlanta United Twitter. You know, looking forward to talking with these sports servants. With that being said, let's get to it.
All right, so as we catch up on the segment here a little bit, I didn't want to go too far into our theme song for the Braves. So the Braves last night, you know, 3-0, right? Eggshells a little bit there, especially after what happened in game one where it just was not going to hit with men in scoring position. And, you know, over the season, we've had those times where it's happened. But we definitely don't want to see it happen in the playoffs. Against the Phillies, of all teams, we don't want to see it happen, but we saw it happen. And, of course, near the end of the game, they came back and everything, but that game should have been almost a runaway with all the people we actually did have on base. So it's one of those deals, but like I said, just like last year, they did lose their first game. It wasn't all gloom and doom. You know, we were able to get through the NLDS, you know, obviously. And last night we did even up the series. You know, Kyle Wright went out there as an ace right now and shut them down. And the bullpen shut them down. And we did enough to win that game. Played just some awesome defense out there. So the series is tied 1-1. So some of the questions I know a lot of people have been throwing out there is, who's going to start game three, obviously? Because that's the pivotal game now. You know, the Fox announcers, John Smoltz, made a pretty big deal of how Philadelphia hasn't been to the playoffs in 11 years. I don't know how many times they said it, but they said it a lot. And how, you know, the fans in Philadelphia are going to be hooting and hollering and all this kind of stuff. At the end of the day, will that matter at all? We're going to find out. But for us, it will matter, I think, who starts game three. Is Strider healthy? Is he ready to go? Is he himself? If not, do you go ahead and put Morton out there where for really half of this season, he just hasn't been great? You know, he strikes out people, but he lets a whole lot of people on base. He gives up a lot of hits. A lot of those hits are extra bases, and the commonality factor is Snicker leaves them in there to do it lots of times. You know, inning after inning and runs after runs. I don't know what's going to happen, but if Strider is healthy, I think you go ahead and put him in there to help try to close out the series rather than making it harder for the Braves to advance. I don't know. So that's one question definitely that people are asking. Other people are straight up asking, are you worried about Philadelphia? You know, they did get kind of hot, you know, at the end of the season, and they did get to the playoffs. They're in the playoffs. They did something, right? You know, so are people, you know, worried about them? So those are a couple of questions. Jordan, what do you think about the series so far? Struggles on offense in that first game, and even really the second game for that matter. And what do you think as far as Morton or Strider starts?
Well, I mean, I didn't really have any type of panic or anxiety when they lost the first game. As you said, the first thing I thought about is they did lose game one against Milwaukee last year. And the funny thing about it is the very next game, actually the next two games after losing game one to Milwaukee last season, the next two games, the Braves won 3-0. So here we go to start this year. We get a 3-0 win after losing game one, just like last year. And, I mean, if that's how we can get another 3-0 win, I take that too. You know, I doubt the score will go to the exact same, you know, for 2 years in a row. As far as the pitching, that's a tough call, man, to be honest with you. Now, what do I expect Snit to do? I expect Snit to go with Charlie because Snit tends to trust in his veteran guys. Is that the right way to go? I'm not sure because I think Strider is healthy. I don't think that they would have him available if he wasn't healthy. I think you err on the side of caution with pitchers, and particularly young pitchers who you just signed the contract extension. So I think he's healthy. The only question I have with Strider is his stamina. How long can he pitch? And you know, start him next game, and he can only go 2 or 3 innings. Then you're forced with having the bullpen, you know, to finish out a good portion of the game and turn right back around and play the next day with no day off in between. And so for that reason, I can understand going with Charlie. Charlie is typically a good performer in the postseason. He has had some struggles this year. I think if you do go with Charlie, though, or Strider for that matter, I think you do have to have a quick hook if they get in big trouble. I don't think you can mess around too long and allow too many runs to be put up on the board. That was the problem in game one, in my opinion, besides the fact that we didn't cash in on opportunities. We just gave up too many runs too early.
Yeah.
Free gave up too many too early. Then when Chavez came in, he gave up another run as well, allowed one of Free's runners to score also. And when you do that, you just give the pitcher on the other team a lot of confidence. He's allowed to relax. He can go out and try to throw his best stuff, knowing that if you make a mistake and you hit it at the ballpark, that's okay because he's still got a lead.
Yeah.
And so I don't think you can give up, you know, four or five runs in the first couple of innings. You can't allow one pitcher to do that. You got to move on if that happens. I'm hopeful that Charlie will come out of the gamer in the postseason if he pitches. I don't really worry about Strider giving up a bunch of runs early. Like I said, I just wonder how long can he go because Strider throws so hard, man. I mean, he's consistently throwing a fastball between 97 and 101 miles per hour. And when you throw that hard, you know, you just wonder, after not pitching for quite a while, can he come out and give you, you know, 5 or 6 innings with the velocity that he brings?
646-652-4479 is a number. One thing about that, though, too, is I know, well, he's a rookie. He's not a veteran or whatnot. Can he dial it down and still pitch effectively? We know we have, you know, power pitchers over the years who figured out how to pitch without having that major velocity. And we all know, you know, you got Greg Maddux out there who's just tossing it up 80 miles an hour and just striking everybody out. So there's that aspect of Strider's game. Can he still be effective even if he doesn't throw at 99? With Morton, the one thing about Morton that you got to look at, too, is we re-sign him for next year as well. He kind of has to do the job now, for real. We really are relying on him right now because, you know, we don't know where Strider is at. You know, obviously we don't have Soraka. I don't know what Bryce Elder's status is going to be. Well, he's not on the roster for this round, is he? Bryce?
Nah.
Yeah, so.
And older reason he is, which is quite confusing to me.
So, so just right there. So all of a sudden, if you don't get a good outing out of either guy, but definitely with Morton, you're definitely putting the bullpen in jeopardy, even with also the fact that you don't have Matzik either. You know, the guy from last year who basically almost won the whole series all by himself, basically, right? So there's a lot of just, we could be teetering on the edge or have an easy peasy, just, you know, just as easy. I didn't mean that to rhyme, but I couldn't stop myself. But anyway, like I said, this is going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting to see if we can at least spot our pitchers some runs at the beginning. Can we get on base? Can we move some people over? You know, those things are going to come into play. And actually, one other thing I didn't mention, let's see if I can find it real quick. If I added it, I don't think I added it. Maybe I didn't. Acuña, Ronald, you know, can he hit? We, you know, out the day after that type of an injury, getting hit on the arm like that, you know, maybe it was just initially just the pain of just being hit right where he was, and maybe that just was a jolt, and it was just, you know, maybe he can shake it off or whatnot. But if that does affect him, he's kind of key right now. We have him this year where we didn't have him last year. We were hoping that it would be an advantage, but if he's not able to hit, that's going to be another lost person that we don't have. You know, Ozzie ain't back yet. You know, and just everybody up and down the lineup, you know, Dansby hasn't been really hitting, you know, so there's a lot there to where it's a lot going on, let's just say that. 646-652-4479. Any other comments in regards to Philly?
Well, I do think that the Matzik being out is a significant loss, man. Not a lot of people are really talking about it. I knew he hadn't quite been pitching as well as he usually does in his last few outings, and it wasn't until the playoff roster came out, he wasn't on it, that I started to see that he was having someone check out his elbow, you know what I mean, for a potential injury. I mean, we still got the guys to get it done, but he is a significant loss because he is a guy that comes out there, he's fearless, he will go right at the opposing team's best hitters. And obviously the famous inning where he relieved Luke Jackson in the NLCS last year against the Dodgers and struck out 3 straight batters to get us out of a jam. So I do think that's a significant loss. Now, looking back at the season, the Braves did beat the Phillies 11 times in 19 games, so the record was 11-8. So, you know, pretty competitive, even though the Braves came out on top. You know, you asked the question, are you worried about Philly? I wouldn't use the term worry, but I do respect them. As you mentioned before, they had to get hot and battle their way just to get into the playoffs. A lot of people didn't think they were going to make the playoffs. A lot of people thought it was going to be the Brewers grabbing that last spot. But Milwaukee kind of folded up down the stretch, and Philly played well down the stretch, and they got in. And I think you particularly have to respect an opponent when they're a divisional opponent. and you played them already 19 times coming into the season. So there are no strangers on those two teams, with the exception of maybe some of the Philly guys that have come up recently, you know, that are younger. We may not be as familiar with some of those guys that recently came up, but as a whole, these two teams know each other very well. They're rivals, they're division opponents, and so I do think you have to respect them. But, you know, I think if the Braves just handle their business and play the way they're supposed to play, they can make it out of this series. It still bothers me, to be honest with you, though, that we don't see more of Vaughn Grissom. He had a pinch hit appearance in that last game, but that was a stretch of time where him and Harris at the bottom of that lineup basically carried this team. When we had some of the bigger guys at the top, Riley and Olsen struggling, those two guys were huge for us. And to bench him for Arcia, and then to see that we could find that bat for Ozuna, you know what I mean? We could find places for him to hit, but we can't find places for Grissom to hit. You know, to me, it's more that veteran loyalty that Smith has going on.
Grissom, at a certain point, was getting two hits a game every time he was in the lineup.
Right. I mean, there was one game I remember where he was 5 for 5. You know what I mean? And even in that last game of the season that he played, he had a couple of hits. And he hit the ball very hard in those games. And if I'm not mistaken, without looking at the numbers, I think Grissom has the second highest batting average on the team. I mean, obviously, he didn't get as many at-bats as some of the other guys. But, I would try to find some at-bats for him somewhere in this series because I think he can help you. I really would start him with Marcia if it was me. But if not, I mean, maybe DH, you know, or what have you, or one of the games or something because, I just think that he's that good of a hitter and that he needs to get some time. I don't know, man. I just think the Braves could definitely – We definitely can get it done if we pitch like we're supposed to pitch. And I do want to say, because I criticize him on his bad, I do want to say, you know, props to Kelly Jansen with the way he's been pitching so far. We definitely need him to keep it up. Looked like he made some adjustments and did some things to get his cutter back to cutting. And that makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah.
Because that's his bread and butter pitch. Then a little stretch where he struggled, he kind of lost command of the cutter. And he was getting crushed. And so hopefully that can stay corrected. And if that's the case, you know, I think we'll do all right. And probably, you know, we're probably looking at another showdown with the Dodgers. Now, I know, you know, San Diego did take that last game.
Yeah, they split. Yeah.
Yeah, just like we have. But ultimately, I expect the better two teams to come out on top.
Yeah.
And to meet once again for a chance to go to the World Series.
646-652-4479 is the number. One other thing about Arcia, it would almost be different if Arcia was, like, hitting. You know what I'm saying? Then you could
walk twice in the last game.
We need hits. You know what I'm saying? We need hits out of everybody out that lineup one way or the other. And at that particular position, depending on where you put them in the lineup, it's even more important. And when you have somebody who was hitting on a regular basis and put someone in who really isn't hitting, that makes it even more important when it's the playoffs that you're not hitting. You know what I'm saying? And especially for the fact that you're starting off at home, too. Now, if he comes out and starts hitting home runs and stuff like that in Philly, I guess. But I think you gotta ride momentum sometimes. And really, like, it's just like in basketball. You got to ride the hot hand at a certain point. And like you said, the combination of Harris and Vaughn at the same time was deadly. Like, they carried the team for weeks, you know. Like, look how the division ended up. If it wasn't for the fact that Harris and Grissom played, the Braves probably definitely don't win that division. I just don't see how it would have happened otherwise. So let's see if he gets any playing time. Hopefully he does. All right, so that being said, I was hoping we get some baseball fans to call in. Especially going into our interview tomorrow. Didn't look like we got any tonight, but hopefully next time we will. Let's go ahead and get into my next segment for tonight. You know, UGA are, hey, guess what? They're still national champions, and they're still undefeated, and actually they're number one again. But they've had some issues, and that's what we're going to talk about next. Let's go ahead. You know I had to play it. So right now, with UGA's situation, the last couple of weeks, and just to kind of tell you that, yeah, it is a little bit of a situation. You know, you had a game where, they won 48-7, right? And then you have a game they won 39-22. Then you had a game where they won by 4 points, right? And then they destroyed Auburn 42-10. But Stinson, you know, didn't really have that great of a game, you know, throwing the ball at all, really. And really the last couple of games. So right now it's a matter of the next game is Vanderbilt, which I don't speculate we're going to have a problem with, at least I hope not. And then the game after that is, of course, Florida. So over these next couple of weeks, you know, do they really have a test or not? We'll have to see. But really it's that offense that can it get regular again? Can it offer, you know, teams, you know, trouble on a regular basis again like they were at the very beginning of the season? And it's like, where are they missing? Is it, you know, plays for Brock Bowers? Is it the running game? Is it the receivers? Is it blocking? Like, what is it that's causing this little snag right now? And again, we're still undefeated despite it, right? But as the season progresses, will they get nicked because of it one game? So that's what we're going to talk about now. 646-652-4479. If you're a fan of UGA, go ahead and call in. Jordan, go ahead and tell us your thoughts as I hit some people up real quick.
I guess to start with, the mailman, Stinson Dennis, he has been a little off in these last couple games. Not quite as accurate as he has been. Been not quite in sync with his receivers, and particularly Roby Jack Spank. It seems like that he's tried to hit him the last couple weeks and quite a few times, and they just have a hard time connecting. But it's not just that, because, I mean, even some of our skills just played Brock Bowers. In fact, he's had a couple drops in the last couple games, uncharacteristically. The best tight end in college football. So I do think that they need to do something to get in sync. Stetson needs to get back to throwing the football like he was throwing it from the national championship game up until the Missouri game. And I think the run game will help that. The run game, it's funny, the run game is kind of strange because they'll get stuffed at times, but then they also break big runs at times. And when you actually look at the stats at the end of the game, they usually have a pretty nice yard per carry. But what's different is we haven't been able to just line up and straight up smash it down the throat of another, you know, SEC high-level team yet. Now, one thing, I was very impressed with the freshman in that last game, Branson Robinson. 12 carries, 98 yards, and a touchdown. That was kind of his coming-out party. Duane Edwards also carried it 12 times. He had 83 yards and 3 touchdowns. Kenny McIntosh, 8 carries, 37 yards. Don't know if Kendall Milton's going to be able to go because he had an injury, a groin injury, in this last game. But if he can't, it's typically been more Milton and McIntosh with some Edwards mixed in. But with the burst of Robinson, more of a power style, you know, think more along the lines of Nick Chubb type back. I'm thinking that, you know, he may be a big key into getting the power running game going, into getting the running game going that can just smash the opponent and move the chains. And I think if you can get that going, because I like the fact that UJ throws it more now and we're just not run heavy, but I think you want to be balanced as much as possible. You want to give Stetson Bennett a little bit of extra time with the play-action game and whatnot. So I think that could be a key. The other key I think that Georgia needs to do on the defensive side of the football is we got to get to the quarterback, man.
We didn't have any facts.
Yeah, we're not getting to the quarterback at all. And you're starting to see Kirby and the guys dialing the pressure a little bit more now. Granted, a lot of these teams are throwing the quick stuff on the perimeter. And even the stuff they're running against us is usually quick stuff, trying to get to the edge to make where they can make one guy miss and get some yards. Obviously, the run defense isn't going to be quite the same without Jordan Davis in there anyway. But still, teams aren't having a lot of success just going up the gut consistently. A lot of stuff on the perimeters, on the edges, hoping that one of those young guys will miss the tackle. But we got to find a way, whether it's coming up to play a little bit more press coverage, to jam these receivers at the line to make the opposing quarterback hold the ball longer so you can get to them. Because right now, it's what they're really attacking is with a lot of quick stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of quick stuff. So it's not just like, you know, they got all day with it. They were sat back there, saying happy birthday, you know, before throwing the ball. But at the same time, you've got to get some sacks if you want to be a top-notch defense in the SEC. And so we got to find a way to manufacture a little bit more pressure.
646-652-4479. I was going to say it. You beat me to it. We didn't get no sacks, you know. And also, we didn't get any turnovers as far as, like, interceptions or anything. I mean, that's a big deal. If you can't get pressure, that means that's a product of it at the end of the day, right? And so, again, it's one of those deals where you win the game 42-10, but against a different opponent, what would the outcome have been? And I think that's where we're getting to, you know, the nitty-gritty to say, how are they going to start controlling that line of scrimmage just a little bit better? Now, the run game did kind of come out, like you said, the rookie, or the freshman, I should say, I guess. He has some great runs out there. We did have a lot of rushing touchdowns. You know, that's always a good thing when you can run and score. But like you said, some drop passes by some of our receivers, even Brock, you know, things of that nature. So I think it could be rectified at the end of the day. Is this going to be a matter of some of this is going to be pure Kirby at this point, right? Just on the coaching side to say, okay, guys, we're kind of, well, would you say you're halfway there? Yeah, I guess so. Halfway through the season, we're still undefeated and we're number one, but we could easily have like a couple of losses and be 15th. You know, or something crazy this year. And, you know, I'm just saying, I know that's extreme, but really, if you look at it, I mean, you kind of, you know.
One thing about it, though, the SEC, you know, with the exception of maybe Vanderbilt, if I'm going to say that, even though we play them this coming week, most of these teams, they can't beat you if you don't bring your A game. They do have high-level athletes. They do have top recruits. And so, and particularly Georgia has a target on their back because they're not only, you know, not only the East champions from last year, they're the national champions. So every team is trying to give their best shot against Georgia. I think it's okay to have a little adversity, you know what I mean? But the difference is, you know, a team that's not, a top-notch team will fold in that adversity and lose the ball game. In fact, I can tell you, under some of the previous regimes we had, that Missouri game would have been a loss.
Oh, yeah, definitely. That's not even a question.
Right. We want to be able to keep fighting back and persevering and come away with a victory. So I kind of like the fact that they've been tested as well. Sometimes I think when you breeze through a regular season of college football so easily that it can become a hindrance. But there are a few things we do need to correct. And particularly, we need to get some stuff corrected before that Tennessee game. I mean, Tennessee is currently ranked 6th right now. They're playing really well. They play really fast with that hurry-up style ball. They throw a lot of quick stuff on the perimeter, throw the ball a whole bunch.
Tennessee is playing with some pent-up anger in the SEC.
Yeah, and that's going to be our stretch right there. November 5th, we play Tennessee at home. Then we travel to Starksville to play Mississippi State, who's currently 16. Then we travel at Kentucky, who's currently number 22. Now, don't get me wrong, you can't overlook Florida because anything can happen in a rivalry game. But we're a better football team than Florida for sure.
Yeah.
We're a better football team than all these teams, but these other three teams are better football teams than Florida also.
Yeah.
And so that's the stretch I think we really have to get, you know, some things corrected before. Because it's still, you know, very important that we make it out of this thing undefeated. Because when you do that, you give yourself that leeway. If you don't beat Alabama in the title game, that you're going to get another shot at them in the playoffs if you both make it, you know, if you both win your first round. One loss SEC team is going to the playoffs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So especially if that one loss is to undefeated Alabama. You know what I mean? And don't get me wrong, I like to beat Cincinnati again and beat them too. But you just want to give yourself that that cushion just in case.
646-652-4479. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be interesting. That's always SEC football in a nutshell. But for the first time, I think, I don't know, in the around the ATL, we're actually going to have a short, well, I don't know how short it's going to be, a short segment talking about another team that's in Atlanta that plays college football.
You move on to them real quick.
Oh, you ruined it.
Want to make this statement. I have some people, hear some people groaning and complaining about that last game and how we didn't look great. And I get it, but to me, that just shows you how far the University of Georgia has come in the program. You know, when we can beat a team 42-10 and people be complaining about that. You know what I mean?
That's true.
That we've come a long way as a program. Expectation level has ramped up tremendously, and I can appreciate that. All right, so I'll let you get to these insects.
No, you ruined it already. So I guess that's actually apropos that you did that, because that's just how we treat them. But guess what, though? You know, we got to give them a little bit of props, because really, I had said, what did I say earlier in the year? I said basically they just need to go ahead and just shut down the football program at Georgia Tech. Just stop spending the money. You know, use the stadium for something else. I don't know what. Turn it into a base. I don't know. But you just can't play football there anymore because they just don't care about it. Like the AD, the coaching staff, none of the boosters, nobody cares about it because how can you let it get this bad? And then one coaching change, and all of a sudden it looks like they're a competitive team that could beat anybody in the ACC all of a sudden, you know? And so now they're 2-3, you know, and so the question is for Georgia Tech, can they make it to a bowl game? You know, when was the last time we could even hint at that in the last few years, much less, you know, all this time that Georgia has been doing all their winning at a certain point? And, you know, with, you know, again, apples and oranges, you have one coaching ideology, and you have players, and then you have a new coaching ideology, and then you have the same players, and they're playing different. They're competing differently. They are doing things that they weren't doing before, and it's obvious. And now it looks like everything matters a little bit now, right? So I definitely give it to him for at least making the change and then actually getting rid of the AD as well. He is part of the problem. You know, a lot of college teams wouldn't do that at this point of a season. They finally did it. So apparently they do care about fans. They do care about the kids. You know, because, again, it's like those kids are in the locker room just, like, languishing away, you know, and they're like, they could have went to another school, and they chose Georgia Tech anyway, right? And so you look at it just from that aspect, I'm very happy for them just on that accord. I know it's, you know, different from me saying what I usually would say, but I want to give them a little bit of credit in this particular case because they deserve some kind of, you know, props just on that basis right now. Now, the question is whether or not they can play well enough to get all the way to a bowl game. What's the common record for a team to get to a bowl now? Is it still like 6-6 at least or something like that?
Yeah, I think you got to win 6 to be bowl eligible. So they got 3 wins right now.
Are they 2-3 or they got 3 wins? My fault.
It's 3-3 from what I can tell. They lost to Clemson, lost to Ole Miss, lost to Central Florida. They beat Pittsburgh and Duke recently. But it looks like they also had a win against whoever WCU is, maybe Western Carolina, on September the 10th. So it looks like they are 3-3, which means they got to find 3-4 wins. You know the last game of the season is in Athens. You know, you can go on and write that down.
They probably think they're going to win, though, but I'm just saying, you know.
They're not going to win that game. they play this upcoming, not this week, but next Thursday at home against Virginia. That's a potential win.
They got Florida State. Yeah.
Much better, which is going to be tough. play at Virginia Tech, which is always a tough battle. You know, Virginia Tech is not what they were. They have Miami at home, they play at North Carolina, then, like I said, they end the season in Athens, which you can go on a pencil that if it lost. So they better find three before they get to Athens.
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah. But no matter what, really, I think that this season will be a success for them just finishing it out strong and giving themselves a chance because, again, what was about to happen was they were never going to get looked at by any young guy at any school in Georgia or any state ever again, really, if they had kept their status quo. They were about to lose, like, everything, you know, and that's what I was saying. It's like, you might as well just go ahead and you're not going to get none of the basketball players to play football for you. So you're not going to be able to do that, you know. So if you don't do something now to shake this up and make it look like you care about that football squad, you got to do it now, and that's what they did. So I give them credit for that. I applaud them. And like I said, they look like a team now, at least, that can compete and win some games year to year. Now, whether or not they could do anything and make a push in the ACC, that's a whole other story. You still got Clemson out there, obviously, you know, a couple of other schools or whatnot. And like you said, they always going to lose that one game against us every year, you know, UGA, Bulldogs, yeah. But at least now it looks like they can do something, and they deserve that, I think, with all the players that they've had. So
we talked about it on the show over and over again, sir. Coaching does nothing. And it was clear that Coach Collins was holding them back big time. One thing about it, though, you know, I do think that you should always try for excellence. But there is certain situations where you have to be careful what you ask for. Now, people said that to us, and particularly myself, Jamie Goodman, Dogcast.com, shout out to him. You know, it came a point when we were ready to move on with Coach Rick. You know, great guy, but we knew we weren't going to get it done with him. And people would say, be careful what you ask for. You're going to lose your recruiting and this and that. And it turns out, we're recruiting better than ever. And we went and got the perfect guy for the job. A Georgia guy in Kirby Smart. But with Georgia Tech, I think people were so eager to get away from that option offense, you know, and stuff that Paul Johnson did, that, you know, it ended up being to their detriment. Because one thing about it, when you have a higher academic requirement, when you're not able to land all of the best athletes, sometimes you do need something that's a little quirky, a little different. Something that people don't see all the time. Something that's a little bit more difficult to prepare for. And that's what playing against Paul Johnson's offense was. Now you bring in, you know, you bring in Jeff Collins running a more traditional offense, but not a good coach at it. You know what I mean? And you had a big drop-off in your program. So it's going to be interesting to see how they finish off, to see if the interim guy gets to keep the job, you know, if they continue to do well. Or to see if they go outside, you know, for a candidate. The name most people mention is Coach Prime. And to be honest with you, I wouldn't do that if I was Coach Prime. I would not. You know what I mean? Because you're always going to be second rate in your own state. And because of the increased academic requirements, it's just hard to get the best of the best athletes in here. If I'm Coach Prime, I just continue to build my HBCU program until, you know, just the perfect opportunity. One of these big time, you know, championship competitor type coaching jobs open up. I don't think he has to jump at the first thing as far as the first major college job. And Georgia Tech, that's a big task. If I were him, I wouldn't do that.
646-652-4479, chime in with what your thoughts would be in regards to primetime Deion Sanders taking over at Georgia Tech possibly, or should he stay where he's at and keep building as Jordan alluded? I believe right now Georgia Tech has to stick with what they got and just keep pulling what they can do because they are in the middle of a rebuild in the middle of the season. That's like crazy to do that in college football, you know what I'm saying? So as far as primetime going to Georgia Tech, I kind of almost lean to him maybe doing it if the circumstances fit him, fit him to where he would be comfortable doing it. Because, more than likely, Georgia Tech won't beat Georgia no time soon. But if Georgia Tech is beating all the other teams, they would be another team in the state, in the actual city at least, that you could actually say in the same breath or same sentence of being a competitive team in the Power 5 conference all of a sudden. And it's been a long time since you could say that of Georgia Tech. And I think that would be something good. Now, whether or not you can get the players in with the academics or whatnot, I mean, maybe. Or maybe some of those guys will start studying a little bit harder to go play with Prime. I don't know. That just could be, you know, part of it right there. You know, culture travels. You know what I'm saying? And if he could bring that to Georgia Tech, that could be an advantage for them at the end of the day. So I think it would be an interesting move if it were to happen. I don't know if it will, but that's just my two cents as far as, you know, prime time.
No matter what, you're going to get, like, cornerbacks and defensive backs that's going to want to come play for Prime, no matter where he is, because he's one of the best of all time to play that position. So that's a position you play. I mean, who better to learn a bunch of, you know, than Coach Prime? And one thing I say, I give Coach Prime, you know, his kids must really enjoy playing for him because he's a fun guy, but at the same time, he knows what it takes to win at the highest level. I mean, he's won Super Bowls. He's a Hall of Famer, you know what I mean? And I don't know if you've seen the whole little spat between him and Coach Robinson after the last game, with Coach saying that he's not swag. And I'm going to tell you, sir, that's hating to me. Yeah, now, obviously, he didn't play for a swag team. He went to Florida State. But the way he got his team whooping those teams at the swag, he looked pretty swag to me. You know what I mean? But one thing about it is, you know, these guys shouldn't hate Coach Prime, man, because Coach Prime has been brought intentional HBCU schools that those schools never got before he was there. Like, you are seeing HBCU highlights on SportsCenter. We never saw that, you know, too often.
That was not normal. That was not normal.
I mean, every now and then, maybe you had a guy like a Steve McNair, you know, who was just an outstanding prospect, who they would show, you know, his highlights or what have you. But for the most part, you don't see those guys on ESPN and whatnot. So I think Coach Prime has been great for HBCU football. I think he's been, you know, helped bring a lot of spotlight on his WAC conference as well as HBCU football as a whole. So shout out to Coach Prime, man. Keep doing what you're doing. I love what he's doing. I guess part of me wants him to stay there for a little while longer just for that aspect, even though I do think eventually he will move on. But I just think, man, he's got his pick to where he can pretty much sit and wait on whatever job would be his dream job to come open, and he will be considered one it does. So I don't think he has to be in any kind of rush. Yeah, you know, if Georgia Tech doesn't have such strict requirements, I mean, who wouldn't want to be a coach in the city of Atlanta? You would think that you could build a program like that, but I do think, that the academic requirements are holding you back, because it pretty much forces you to where you have to get the best scholars, you know. But the thing of the matter is, even though some of those guys are scholars, some of them may go play football for an Ivy League team, or some of them may go to Georgia or to Alabama or the SEC, even though they are scholars.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's hard to do, man. I mean, we've seen Jim Harbaugh and David Shaw do it to a degree at Stanford, but even then it's hard for it's been hard for coaches to sustain success year in and year out, because Stanford has the similar requirements as Georgia Tech. Probably about the exact same, maybe a little harder even. But, you know, you got to have a certain academic level to even play football at those schools. That's just what it is.
646-652-4479 is the number. Before we get ready to take a break going into the top of the hour, I do want to do a couple of things just to make sure I don't forget to do them next hour. We got some clips that we're going to be showing, so I want to go ahead and give a shout-out to Highlight Heaven, NBA.com, and the NBA G League website. And, of course, I want to bring back attention to the new Around the ATL t-shirt, the first shirt ever for Around the ATL, courtesy of the Originative brand. Make sure I put that up right there again. Make sure it's scrolling now. The Originative brand on Instagram, go to his page. Jamal Price is the owner. Again, he's designed the first logo of Around the ATL in history, and the current one that you see, along with some other work that we've done over the years. He's definitely professional. It's worth the investment for sure. So make sure you hit him up. Make sure you let him know Around the ATL sent you. And when you go to the site, look at all the different shirts that you can get. He does custom shirts that's sports-centric to the state of Georgia and the city of Atlanta. So if you're a Braves fan, Falcons fan, Hawks fan, UGA fan, sometimes Georgia Tech fan, any kind of fan of Georgia sports, he can hook you up with a great shirt. He has a great shirt for the Atlanta Braves winning the World Series last year. I have that shirt, actually, and a myriad of other shirts. And as Jordan kind of mentioned at the beginning of the show, he could do hats. He could do all kind of other apparel as well. So make sure you hit him up. Also, before we go on break, I do want to mention that those who are listening to Around the ATL, if you ever have a need for images for yourself, whether it be headshots for your business, headshots for your acting, especially if you're in the ATL, you know, all the movies are shot in Hollywood, right? Black actors, right? But anyway, if you need pictures for whatever you want and need, make sure you hit up imtmworldwideimages.com. Make sure you let us know that Around the ATL sent you as well. Most recently, I know they did a family shoot with for a maternity shoot, but it was all of a sudden the kids were there and everybody was there. So we did a big old family shoot. So check that out on the website. It was really nice. There's a behind the scenes video of the whole family and everything. So anytime you need something along those lines, hit us up. So that being said, we're going to get ready to go into the second app. Go ahead, Jordan.
Real quick before you go on break, man, on a somber note, on behalf of Around the ATL, I do want to send love and, you know, thoughts, condolences to a guest that we've had on the show, Jamila J. MBA, who recently did lose her father. And so, you know, Jamila, we're praying for you, and we just want to let you know we are thinking about you during this difficult time.
Definitely. So I remember, well, when she posted what she said about her dad, and I made sure I hit her up as well, because I've lost my dad to cancer and everything. You know, losing a parent is like the worst thing. It's the worst thing. So I'm gonna keep it at that. So I appreciate you bringing that up. So that being said, what we're gonna do is gonna take a little bit of a break. Going into the top of the next hour, we're gonna be talking some Falcons. We're gonna be talking Hawks, of course. With the Falcons, we gotta talk about the call. That's what should be listed on the newspaper clipping, right? The call, you know. And we're gonna talk some Hawks basketball preseason, but the regular season is right around the corner. So we're gonna take a little bit of a break. In the meantime, y'all don't go anywhere. Come right back. This is IMTM Worldwide Radio, and this is Around the ATL, our first show of October. Appreciate all the support as usual. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere on Around the ATL. Good evening, everyone. This is Chris on IMTN Worldwide Radio. This is Around the ATL, our first show of October. I'm very excited about getting back on the air. It's been a while, of course. 646-652-4479 is the number. First hour, we talk Braves baseball in the playoffs. Obviously, they're tied 1-1 with Philadelphia, about to go into Philadelphia and play the first playoff game in 11 years in Philadelphia. And right after that, we talked UGA and Georgia Tech football, which is probably never going to happen again ever, but we did it tonight. So hopefully everybody enjoyed that particular segment. Of course, welcome to all who've been watching and all who will watch in the future. We appreciate your support. And don't forget, you can listen to the show on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spreaker. Even Alexa, if you just call out Around the ATL on Alexa, you can hear the show past episodes as well. Jordan, thanks for being available again. I know we had some technical difficulty there, but appreciate you being able to make it. Oh, one more thing, of course. We got the first shirt in Around the ATL history on right here. We're going to be having more shirts to come. I'm going to try to get me a red shirt for Hawk season coming up. We'll see if I can make that happen in the very near future. Make sure you go to the Originative Brand on Instagram and get you a shirt. Jordan, how you doing, man?
Oh, man. Always, as always, man, enjoy chopping up about these Atlanta sports, man. There's always so many different storylines, so many interesting details to get into with these teams. And thankfully, you know, recently there's even been some championship things to get into. You know, as we currently have the reigning defending national college football champions, the Georgia Bulldogs, and the reigning defending World Series champions. So this is an exciting time, as always, in Atlanta sports, man. And, you know, and I say as always, but even an even more exciting time than what we've had, you know, in recent years to start this show. So, man, just blessed, man, to be able to, you know, be on Around the ATL and talk
about
sports.
Yep, yep. That being said, let's go ahead and get that Falcon segment going.
Yeah. Welcome to Atlanta, home of them dirty birds. Anybody hating, get kicked to the curb. Any other team is absurd. Wearing black, white, silver. Red is for the blood. No one's scared of getting dirty because we came from the mud and we hungrier than ever. He rides, she rides, we rise.
Talking about the Dirty Bird is back. That was kind of cool to see that the other week as well, which makes this even more upsetting to watch the following. Now, I promise I had some video, so I'm sorry. I have to do it because this is what you do. Here we go.
Comes out at the end of the play. Oh, my goodness. This is going to go on Atlanta, breaking Falcons' hearts.
You know what really just gets me again just watching that? Is the fact that there was an expectation from Brady that a call was going to be made on that. And then he gets on this so-called show and talk about, well, you know, I don't throw the flags, and, you know, it was just an uncomfortable, long, elongated hug by Grady, and Grady was having a game out there, and that's all I'll say about that. As if he has just no influence or anything over how things go, because he is freaking Tom Brady, right? But he knows that that wasn't a flaggable call. We all know. Everybody knows. The whole industry knows. But here we are, and we're 2-3, when we should be flip-flopped and beating that team for the first time under Brady, or beating Brady on any team for that matter, of course. But that's what makes it upsetting just watching that again. That's why I had to pull it up and actually play it. So 646-652-4479, please call in if you got an opinion. Or you can even type it on the chat line under the IMT and Warlock Radio page. But, Jordan, what were your first thoughts, ponderance in regards to the call? Do you think it's the worst call of all time? What's your thoughts?
I mean, it's definitely up there. I mean, I saw several national analysts that said it was the worst call they ever saw. I saw several that said it was the worst roughing the passer call that they ever saw. And it's just terrible because he basically got Brady and rolled Brady over himself to keep from putting all his weight on Tom Brady. He didn't land completely on top of him, which we know will draw you a flag, as crazy as that is. He didn't drive him into the ground. He didn't sling him on his head like what happened to Tua. And so there was no reason why flags could have been thrown right there. And, you know, I could be tripping, but I kind of think because there was another call that wasn't as egregious as that one in the Raiders Chiefs game against that Derek Carr got the benefit of. But in that situation, the guy at least did land all his weight on top of the call. I think it was Chris Jones of the Chiefs, if I'm not mistaken. But it's like I felt like they only called that one just to take some of the controversy off of what happened with Brady. And I mean, I hate to be the one to say it, but you know, Tom Brady is the beneficiary of these calls oftentimes. And it does, you know, upset you because he acts so innocent. Like, well, I don't make the calls, but clearly he's there politicking for a call, like he often does. And on top of that, he tried to kick Brady in the cards after the sack as well. You know, at that point, I just wish the Falcons would just start a big fight with them. You know what I mean? Because they've already robbed the game from him. So, you know what I mean? You might as well get your money good. You know what I mean? And so, you know, you get a chance to touch Brady again, you might as well pick him up and suplex him. You know what I mean? Just don't get your money's worth. You know what I mean? Because they got a power to go anyway. You know what I mean? But you might as well get your money's worth. But it was just disappointing. You know, and a lot of people will say, well, you don't know that they were going to go down and score. And that's true, but you don't know that they don't, that they won. You know what I mean?
It was the fact that the opportunity was just ripped away from them with the momentum in their favor at that.
Right. We had just scored a 2 consecutive drives. The momentum was in our favor. And like you said, just the fact that you take that opportunity from us, don't give us a chance to, you know, see if we could go down and score. You don't give us a chance to go down there and win that game. But, you know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, well, I will say this, is the Falcons have been some very exciting football this year because all five games have been one-score football games, every last one.
You're in the game.
So, you know, you could be 5-0 or you could be 0-5. You know what I mean? That's just how close.
One of the commentators mentioned how in his first two seasons, how many games has Arthur won one-score games as basically a rookie coach. That's not usual. You know what I'm saying? He's had this team in all these games, no matter who's on the roster, we're in these games. Where 2 years ago, before this, we wouldn't have been in any of these games. We wouldn't have had a shot in the world but that's a whole nother story in itself. So I just look at the fact that call was made. That was the only sack that the Falcons would have had that day, okay, for one. So, again, that just turns the tide as far as that goes. And like I said, we don't know what would have happened. You know, we could, you know, Mariota might have thrown an interception or fumbled it. Hey, you know, he has been doing that a little bit, right? We could have, you know, one of the receivers going down the field could have, you know, fumbled the ball. But also, too, remember, that sack being taken away caused us to have to also call our last time out, too. Just that right there lost us the game or the opportunity to be able to do anything, because all they had to do at that point was now get another first down, which we had stopped them a couple of times, right? So, this again, it was just a matter of this is something that needs to be fixed as far as being reviewable or not, because that's the other part of it. Because I believe sincerely, if that call had went to New Jersey, that would have came back and be like, no, you can't do that, sir. You see what I'm saying? But since it wasn't, there you are, you know, and again, it's like, it's not the first time he's had this kind of call either, apparently, if you do a little bit of research, obviously. So I don't know. Is this, I just know if this had happened during a playoff game, stadium probably would have got burned down, because this is no way you could just do that and just take a playoff win away from a team, because you know how hard it is to get to the playoffs, right? And even with Grady saying, I mean, Grady said it, you know, these are these guys' careers, right? And every win does matter. You know what I'm saying? And in this particular case, this was also another opportunity for this team to actually beat Tom Brady, right? And so now it all comes down to January, because we know, well, we shouldn't say that. Tom might come back and keep playing until he's 52 at this point, right? He don't got nothing else to do because he don't like his family. But anyway, that's another story in itself. I had to throw that in there, you know. But this January is going to be the last time possibly that Tom Brady faces the Falcons ever. And it'll just be really messed up that we can't beat him. You know, the principle of it all. You know how that goes. So this would have been it, I think, could have been, you know. So that was another thing that was taken away from the Falcons as far as that opportunity or whatnot. But this also could be a catalyst, too. This could be one of those deals where all of a sudden Falcons make the playoffs. Now, if people have been watching and listening to the show over the last couple of months, you know that I predicted in April that the Falcons would win 9 games this season. Now, it wasn't looking good after the first couple. I was getting kind of worried there. But here we are now at 2-3. We have a shot to beat the 49ers, especially with anger in their hearts. I hope so. We can get to 3-3. At that point, you just never know. So next question, hopefully, you know, we get some. Let me make sure we haven't gotten a phone call. I hadn't checked in a second. 646-652-4479. Can the Atlanta Falcons make the playoffs? Can they get a wild card? Remember, there's 3 spots now this year, you know, with the 17th game and all that kind of good stuff. So do they have a chance in the NFC as is? Can they make the playoffs? What do you think, Jordan?
I mean, I think it's possible, just for some of the fact that, to be honest with you, looking around the NFC, I really don't see any good football teams with the exception of the Philadelphia. Philadelphia Eagles look like a pretty dominant team. They got a test from the Cardinals. But other than them, nobody has really emerged out of the NFC that's just a great team. All the divisions are pretty jumbled up, along with the South, you know what I mean? So, you know, it's just a matter of which teams gel and get better between now and then. Now, will we make the playoffs? I'm not ready to make that leap yet. Because there's just still so many variables. We run the football quite well, but passing game, man, still leaves a lot to be desired. And I'll be honest with you, I think we're going to have quite a hard time beating San Francisco this week. I think Kyle Shanahan has some stuff schemed up that he wants to run against our defense. Our defense has been better in certain aspects, but we're still inconsistent in the pass rush. 1 week we'll have sacks, the next week we won't have any. And the fact of the matter is, San Francisco giving up the second fewest rushing yards of any team. It's only about 71 yards a game that they're giving up. Only Kansas City is giving up less. And I think it's part of the reason why Kansas City gives up less because teams just throw on them, because they know they can throw on them. San Francisco probably is the best defense in the NFL right now. And the fact of the matter is, can we drop back and throw the ball and beat a team if the running game is not clicking? I'm not sure Mariota can do that. He has been terribly inaccurate in a lot of opportunities this year. And so, I it's possible he could be best with going, but I have a hard time seeing us win that football game if we got to win it with Mariota making plays in the past. But with that being said, you know, there are some positives. Looking at some of the Pro Football Focus things, and I know it's not the exact science or anything, but on how the grades are, for example, like I was talking about, we had some struggles in the passing game, and Mariota is 29th of 36 qualified quarterbacks with a grade of 61.2. Drake London has a good grade, 81.8. which is seventh among wide receivers in the top offensive rookie grade. But the last couple games, London really hasn't been able to get loose because Mariota hasn't been able to find him. The last two games, I do think Kyle Pitts is going to play this week, which helps because, well, I'm noticing the guy who's being doubled and keyed on, Mariota doesn't find him very much. And I think that shifted last game to London being the one drawing more of the coverage since Pitts was there to draw that coverage. And so I think maybe that's why London wasn't able to get as free in the last game. And like I said, in the game before that, we only completed 7 passes. So just wasn't very many completions for anybody to put up big numbers. The other thing is Cordarrelle Patterson still being out. Now, I think the young guys have done a pretty good job. Tyler Algier, for example, he's done pretty well. In fact, he's graded the 14th highest running back out of 63. But Cordero is the 8th greatest running back out of 63. And, you know, also he's explosive in the passing game. And if you looked at any of the breakdowns that Brian Baldinger does on Twitter, in particular those first few weeks, when you had Patterson, Pitts, and London, and you could line them all up on the same side of the field, you know, with two of them and split out, and then Patterson in the backfield. It was really making defenses make some hard choices on who to focus on, who to guard. And if you make the right read in those situations, it was almost impossible to stop. And like, you know, Baldinger said, you know, when we had all three of those guys in there, you want to basically just keep going to those guys. You know, Patterson, Pitts, London. You know, wash, rinse, repeat. And without having, you know, all of those guys in there right now, which I do think we're getting Pitts back this week, which will help, it's just been difficult. But I will say I do want to give a shout-out to Christian Lindstrom. Christian Lindstrom currently, with a 91.3 grade, is the number one rated offensive guard in the NFL. And so that's outstanding. And just to look at the rest of the line to keep it example. Drew Dahlman is 26th out of 38 centers. Guard Elijah Wilkinson is 47th out of 75 guards, which isn't great, but when you consider that...
That's an improvement, man.
Maybe it would have been 75 or 75.
You might have been 80 out of 75. Come on.
That's an improvement. I do want to give Caleb McGarry a little credit. He's improved. He's number 20 out of 72 offensive tackles, which is improvement for him, 71.9 grade and a 71.7 run blocking grade. He's done some good work run blocking on the right side. And then Jake Matthews, he's 31st of 72 tackles with 68.8 grade, which is right in the middle. And that's just been the story of his career, man. You know, just not great, not bad. But I do think, you know, within the next two drafts, that's something that we're going to have to address is eventually moving on to get the next left tackle. And hopefully that left tackle will be somebody that's even a little bit better than Jake Matthews, who's not a bad football player by any means. But I just think, you know, you'd like to have a stud, a Pro Bowl, all-pro type guy, you know, in that position.
646-652-4479, talking about the O-line a little bit. They have improved. The Falcons would not have a top five running offense if the offensive line was terrible still. And at the end of the day, they do give our quarterback some time to throw. They'll give up some sacks, but it's nothing like it was last year. That's obvious. And they're playing better than what they were last year. A lot of that is because Jalen ain't in there. But you highlighted some guys who are having some pretty decent seasons right now. And if they were having that kind of season last year, I think last year would have been a little bit different. Okay, but obviously. And as far as, you know, Marcus throwing the ball, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, accuracy does matter at a certain point. We could see it in the – well, I don't have Prime, Amazon, whatever, and I'm hearing tell what's going on in that football game tonight. Accuracy matters, people. Just saying. At a certain point, it just does. And if you can't get the ball to your guys – it does limit you a lot because that does allow the other team to scheme to basically say, we're going to dare him to throw it now, right? And at a certain point, it just makes everything a lot harder. Now, again, right now, our run game has offset that a little bit. And that's where I'm like, we need to run it more then. It's just a principle. You know, you run. I don't care what the situation is, but it gives a lot less opportunity for mistakes to happen on that side, you know. And then then it's just a matter of you got to do your job. You got to make that easy throw, because if you can't make the easy throws or the hard throws, then what are you throwing for? And at a certain point, again, I've stressed this, I feel that to give the team the best opportunity to win, and Jordan's already kind of said it already, I think Arthur Smith will make a move. If he eventually feels that nothing is going to happen better than what it has, and we're being limited, you know, because of the lack of being able to get the ball in the people's hands, whether it be long down the field or short passes or intermediate or whatever it might be, those basics of football on the quarterback side, they have to happen. Now, yes, him being able to run does help. Actually, him being able to get, what was it, 61 yards rushing the other day, helped the team out at the end of the day, right? But when you're talking about sustaining drives and sometimes you're in that third and eight situation, that you got to be able to throw that eight-yard pass. it's a staple of all the quarterbacks that have been great. And, again, he's an eight-year veteran. He's not a rookie. He's not a two-year quarterback, right? So the expectation, and he was a number two drafted quarterback at that. This is his shot. And let me pull it up real quick. Let's see. Where are we? 14 for 25. That is not good. I don't care what level of football you're in. That's not good. That was last week. The week before that. 7 for 19. That's not good. I don't care what level of football you're in. You see what I'm saying? And
when you're looking at 21 out of 44 in the last two games, man. I mean, that's not going to get it done.
And then you throw in the turnover part of it. Like, that's just not – when you're mixing stuff up, you can't put that together and say that's a winning formula. That doesn't work. And when you
– wrong now. I do want to credit him being able to run is a factor in the running game. If we had, you know, just a mediocre pocket passer back there that couldn't run, our running game would not be as good as it is. When the quarterback is a threat to keep the ball and go out the back door, it does make the backside have to stay home to make sure he's handed the ball off before they can pursue the running back. So it does open up more run lane. But our backup quarterback also has that same ability. You know what I mean? So, therefore, that's not a reason not to make a switch.
And at the end of the day, it can't get any worse. So, at this point, you know, and again, we're going to get some players back. I think Anderson is going to get on the field a lot more, and he's going to be able to contribute. Every time he's in the game, he's making some plays. I just think that we're at that point where are we going to compete or not? And if the coach is true to his word from when he started coaching this team a year ago, is that he's here to win games. That's the goal. Dean Pease came out of retirement to win games, not rebuilding a whole team or anything like that. And they, again, they won 7 games last year. The year before that, they won 5 games. That's a progress report. Now they're pacing right now to possibly win 9 games or even more. I don't know. Maybe scratch the playoffs. I don't know. That's progress. Next year, they're going to have money. You see what I'm saying? And actually, one thing I do want to mention about next year, what about Calvin Ridley? There's a lot of people talking, you know, on both sides of the fence on the fact that, you know, Calvin has $11 million that will be coming to him. He's not a free agent because since he was suspended, his free agency got pushed a year. So he's going to be, unless we trade him, he'll be on this team next year with $11 million coming to him. So do you would you sit him on the bench for an entire year and just pay him $11 million? Do you try to trade him and see what you can get at the end of the day? Or do you find out where his mindset is in regards to playing with this team and play him or not? And how would that affect next year going in? Or do you just look at it, you know, do you try to get someone who possibly can even be better than Ridley, and or do you go to the draft again, pick another receiver, which I just don't see how we could do that. That'd be crazy. But we like crazy here for some reason. I don't know. So that's the question. 646-652-4479. Do we bring back Calvin Ridley after he becomes eligible? I believe next February he's eligible to come back at that point. What do you think, Jordan?
I don't think Calvin Ridley ever plays another game for the Atlanta Falcons. I don't. Now that $11 million, it was a fifth year option. So even though he's owed that salary, the Falcons can waive him before the start of the season, and they won't have any dead money from that. I expect them to try to trade him. I think, you know, if they do trade him, it'll end up being something similar to what just happened with Deion Jones getting traded, where the Falcons will trade Ridley and a seventh-round pick, get back a sixth-round pick, something like that, because his value is completely shot at this point, having not played football for about a season and a half by the time, you know, we get to the offseason next year. I think if you're unsuccessful in trading him, you just cut him and keep it moving, because, you know, it's just too much, you know, too much bad with the, you know, him having to first take a break with mental health and then come to find out, so it was in relation to gambling, you know what I mean? And, you know, I think he solid in some ways, but then, you know, he also does have some issues dropping the ball, doesn't like contact over the middle. He's just not the Arthur Smith type guy. Arthur Smith likes receivers who will go over the middle. Arthur Smith likes receivers who are good blockers in the run game. So, yeah, I think we've seen the last of Calvin Ridley after the Atlanta Falcons. And I just don't think he's the type of guy that you want mentoring, you know, guys like Drake London and Kyle Pitts and whatnot, after everything that's taking place. As far as, you know, what do you do at receiver, I think we got a decent little core. I think, you know, with all the money we'll have in free agency, I think you could use some of your money to bring in one free agent receiver to complement Drake London and Zacchaeus, and then Kyle Pitts, you know, is a tight end slash receiver. You know, or you could bring in another tight end that's more of a blocking slash pass catching tight end guy, and use Pitts more split out, wide, you know, in some 3 wide receiver sets, and you have him down in line in 2 tight end sets. But there's a lot of ways you can go having a versatile guy like Kyle Pitts. But, yeah, I don't think you're cool with Kyle Pitts. I think that ship is sailed.
646-652-4479. I think there is a small little bitty, itsy bitty chance that it could happen. And I believe it would depend on who the quarterback is to an extent. And then the conversation part of it will be, you know, again, would the organization want him back into the fold after all is said and done? And that's just a matter of, you know, his talk and things of that nature. Because at the end of the day, he's going to have to play with somebody, and they're going to have to trust him just as much as anybody too, right? So there's that part of it or whatnot. But, yeah, organizational-wise, I think it would be definitely hard. But I think just if it got down bare bones, and, I mean, He can't run a route. We know that, you know, maybe all of his routes won't be in the middle. I don't know. that'll be for Pitts and London to do the in the middle stuff, and he'll go on the outside, I guess. But I don't know. I think there's a small chance, but more than likely, probably not as well. But I just had to bring it up because I saw a lot of people talking about it, and, you know, him and Harn, so I just wanted to bring it up, see what people thought. Go ahead, Jordan.
I know, before we move on, I just want to look at some more of these Pro Football Focus grades on some of the defensive players. Currently, a guy like D. Alford, 19th out of 104 cornerbacks. Casey Hayward's 38th at corner. A.J. Terrell, who's been kind of disappointing, but mainly because he's given up quite a few touchdowns, he is 71st at cornerback. Richie Grant, who had a hard time getting on the field last year, 17th out of 86 safeties, which is pretty good. Jalen Hawkins, 39th safety. Rashawn Evans, 31st linebacker. Mikal Walker, 59th linebacker, which I haven't heard an update on his injury, but I'm anticipating he may be out this week, which would give Troy Anderson a little bit more playing time. Just a comparison, Rashawn Evans has a 66.2 grade, Mikal Walker, 53.6, and Troy Anderson is at 64.6. Even though his snaps aren't enough to qualify for a leader. Defensive line goes, Timmy Horn, 35.3, 150 defensive lineman. Taquan Graham, 44 of 121 defensive lineman. Grady Jarrett, 17th out of 121 defensive lineman with a 78.4 grade. Arnold Ibiketti, 91st. Of 112 edge defenders with a 56.9 grade. Lorenzo Carter, 64 edge defender with a 63.8 grade. And I can never say this guy's name, so we're just going to say A-Day Ogundeji. He is 112 of 112.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
Ouch. Yeah.
So, I think we just need we need a little bit more consistency from the front guys. If not, Dean Pease is going to have to step it up as far as dialing up his blitzes.
Yeah.
He'll have to start dialing up even more. Because, like I said, we're on pace to do a lot better than what we did in the past. But I think we've had a couple games. I know we didn't really get much pressure against Tampa, and we didn't really get much against the Rams. So we got to get more consistent in that area as far as pressuring the quarterbacks.
Yeah. 646-652-4479. It's going to be an interesting rest of the season. Like I said, you know, we're going to play San Francisco next week, or this week, I should say. Cincinnati's coming up. I think we can beat Cincinnati if it got down to it. So I think we can still be 500 in the next couple of games. We'll see how it goes. That being said, we got one more segment to go tonight that you as an audience gets to watch. And, of course, you can – chime in, call into the show, 646-652-4479. The chat room is still open as well. As we get ready to talk about the Atlanta Hawks, you know, they went on a little international trip recently, and they had a nice business affair out there. So let's go ahead and talk about that now. Played out there in Abu Dhabi, two games with the Milwaukee Bucks. Looked really good, you know, for the minutes that everybody played, you know, the first time getting to see Trey and Murray playing together for the most part. And just seeing the other players kind of, you know, getting their feet up under them, little camaraderie, things of that nature. That first game, you know, we got to see the Holiday brothers, you know, for the first time getting minutes. I think Justin had 31 minutes and Aaron had 25. Aaron was 6 for 12 from the field, hit 2 of 3 from three-point line. had 16 points that game. You know, that was some valuable stuff there. Justin, like I said, he had 30 minutes, went 3 for 7 from the field, had 9 points that game, hit 1 for 3 from that's free throws, 2 for 6 from three. So he hit a couple of threes, and Justin can hit a shot. Like, both of the Holidays can hit shots, so that's definitely going to help the bench out this year until Bogey comes back, whenever that is. Of course, Hunter, the last couple of games, have been playing very well. And if we get this version of Hunter, we'll do all right. So definitely looking forward to that. So let's talk about the Hawks. First thing, Jordan, what do you think about the Hawks in that trip out to Abu Dhabi? Was it a successful one in the minds of the ones on the international side, since they were picked to play the Bucks? You know, was that a good look, I think, for the city? I believe it was. And how do you think Trey looked? How do you think the rest of the guys looked overall?
I think so. I think for one, it was good because I think they really put on a nice show for the fans. And I'll tell you what, I was quite impressed that first preseason game, really with both teams, on how sharp they looked for being a first preseason game. And I think some of that is a testament to, you know, the guys like Trey, DeJounte, and John all get together to play at a pro-am tournament together. You saw DeJounte playing quite a few games in different tournaments. You saw Trey playing in different games. You saw Clint even get out there in a game. I saw Okongwu playing in quite a few games. So I think some of that helped those guys. But I was very impressed early. That second game, a game in which Giannis sat out, I think Trey really put on a show in that second game. He had 31 points at halftime of that game. And, I mean, he was out there crossing guys up. He shook Drew Holiday, who I consider probably the best point guard defender in the NBA, out of his shoes on one particular play and got a layup. Did a big pass in that particular game. And I think the fans were really excited about the show he was putting on. And I think that he, you know, he really endeared himself to the basketball fans over there, which, you know, helps the Hawks brand internationally, helps his own personal brand internationally. And I think that, you know, you'll be seeing some of the Trae Young, you know, whether it's Trae Young 1s or maybe Trae Young 2s that are coming out, but I think you'll be seeing those around in Abu Dhabi because I do think he has gained some fans there. As far as the product overall on the court, I do think that Trae has been trying to get for just a little bit, playing off the ball. I know, you know, as his dad, Reyes, told us that he has played off the ball a lot in his life growing up. It wasn't always the point guard in control of every team he played on, but it's still an adjustment, you know, after being the lead guy for so long. I think you do see at times him maybe a little hesitant sometimes coming off certain screens. And I think it's just a bit of an adjustment. I think we're probably playing Trey a little bit more off the ball now than we will all season. I think they're just doing it a lot more now just to get him used to it. Because that second game, DeJounte didn't play and Trey was on the ball all game. And he comes out with a 31-point half.
Yeah, six assists, too.
Yeah. I think it's a bit of an adjustment there, but, you know, overall, man, I really think a lot of, you know, fans of other teams, you know, whoever these pundits are that are picking the Hawks, haven't been the East, eighth in the East and all that, I really think that they're overlooking how much DeJounte really brings to the table on what this team needs. This guy is the perfect addition for us because not only does he bring another creator, and a deadly guy he's deadly on the mid-range pull-up. But he's such a good defensive player, man. I mean, he'll block shots. He'll get the fast lanes. He'll pick guys' pockets. He can guard the quick guards that DeAndre struggled to guard a little bit. And so now you actually have two guys on the wing, so who can really get up on guys and lock in. I do think it's going to be a big help. But outside of our main guys, one guy who I've really been impressed with his last couple games, man, is A.J. Griffin. A.J. Griffin is an outstanding shooter. Man, you put that up quick. His very first time he came off the screen and caught a pass and trade, he let that thing fly and it was nothing but this.
Hold up, actually, Jordan. I believe I got that. Hold on, let's see.
On cue against the rookie.
There you go.
Yes, sir. You did have it indeed. And you know, not only is the guy just a good shooter, he's a high character guy. And I just think that, you know, the Hawks once again, Travis Swink, I think, has done it. That he's found, you know, a diamond in the rough, a gem, and he seems to go ahead. Well, I'm telling you, he doesn't mess around, you know, like the guy thought was going to get drafted higher, but seemed to slip for whatever reason. Then, like Travis Knight goes ahead and takes that guy, and it works out pretty well for him.
Yeah.
You know, the same could be said with Taylor Johnson, who I was quite impressed with last night. Before I move on to Jalen, not only did I thought Griffin had 4 threes in the game last night, but I think they called one of them for 2, so he ended up with 3 threes. But he also had, I'm trying to pull it enough, but 6 rebounds in that game, if I'm not mistaken. And Jalen Johnson had 11 rebounds in that last preseason game. And so, I'll tell you what, man, you know, I shouldn't be starting controversy this early, but I'm going to do it. I've seen enough of AJ Griffin that I want him in the rotation soon. I'd rather him play over Justin Holiday, to be honest with you.
Mm.
Because you know Bogey's going to play, you know, and you go, you know DeJounte's going to play a lot. To me, a second unit of DeJounte running point, Bogey, AJ Griffin, Okongwu, and either leave John in to play with that unit or Jalen, that's a great second unit, sir, to me. You know what I mean? And, you know, as long as, I mean, honestly, if you need more defense, you can go with just in that spot. But as a whole, man, I don't think AJ's going to be a bad defender either. You know what I mean?
He moves.
The hole is on the boards. I'd rather him play, man, because I think he's very, very talented. One thing about it, way back when I was in middle school, my basketball coach told me back then, he was like, keep working on your shots, Jordan, because a shooter can play in any league, you know, and this guy is a pure shooter. And to have a guy like that, when you have, you know, a guy like the Jonte on the floor, you know, and a guy like John on the floor that can finish, to have one more guy out there that you just can't unleash it, I think that's tough, man, and to be able to have like him and Bogey both out there at the same time.
It puts all the pressure on you because since we're talking about AJ a little bit, let's go ahead and give him a little bit more shine real quick.
Game, and that's why we'll see how much from these guys get together. It is an important part for the back end of the roster as well.
On cue.
That you're able to see in the Middle East with two NBA teams playing one another, but also to really get to meet them, of their personalities, and understand just how important the game is around the world.
AJ Griffin, it's the three.
And favorite in Milwaukee, and they bring...
Okay, I just wanted to put that out there just a little bit, just to give a little bit of a... You saw how he moved over in that corner to be able to be ready for that shot? Nothing but net. He moves without the ball. That's something to where if our offense is actually going to be dictated of that, yeah, I believe AJ should be in the rotation just as much. And the fact that, you know, he looks like he came up the floor a couple of times with the ball too, right? So he's comfortable doing that a little bit as well. But if we set some screens, and again, this is one of the things I talked about last year, we could get really good at setting screens. We could score 150 points a game. Okay.
just rebounds in that last preseason game against Cleveland. Okay, and I guess they did change. Because when I last looked at the box score after the game last night, they had them at 3 3-pointers, but they do finally have them at 4 or 6 from 3. So they did correct that one that they called a 2 or 3.
Yeah.
So 4 or 6 or 3, 14 points and 6 rebounds. Pretty good, man. Good.
I think, and again, I think we got to find out how many people they can keep on the active roster from week to week. At worst, he needs to be active. He can't just be there and be not able to play or whatever, and definitely you can't put him in College Park. He needs to be available as far as depth goes.
If he doesn't play in College Park, I'll go watch. You know, if they come to College Park for a while to play you guys, I'm going to go live in person and support that guy because I like him as a person and as a player. So I'll be there to watch him. But I agree. I think he can help the regular rotation.
Now, one thing I do want to bring up is Aaron Holiday because, you know, in that game in Abu Dhabi, I can't remember which one it was, he had a really good game. The second game, not so much. He played 18 minutes in that one, went 2-for-6 from the floor, had 5 points. He did have five boards, though, but didn't have any assists in that particular game. But as a guard, you know, he's able to run the offense, and he can score. He can get his own shot and things of that nature. With what we saw with that Cleveland game, and we'll talk about the Cleveland game in a second, there was just so many times where you saw a lot of one-on-one stuff happening out there, you know? And I'm just wondering with just how that second unit will be paired up eventually, can that be avoided? Because I'm just hoping they look at the tape because there was just so much one-on-one. Trey had the ball. It was just like last year. You're just standing there watching him. And I'm like, you're playing into the defense at that point. That can't work sustainably. So I'm wondering, how does Aaron really kind of fit into being on this team if you do play Murray a lot, you know, kind of staggering, you know, not having both guys off the floor at the same time? Because I believe you can give both those. I believe you can give Trey and Murray their proper rest and have Holiday and or Justin and Holiday and or Bogey and AJ on the floor at the same time and still be able to run the offense and score, especially with Big O and Jalen out there. What do you think?
I mean, I like Aaron's game. I think a lot of people, you know, they looked at that sign as just whatever. Nobody really didn't pay much attention to it. But I think he's better than just somebody you overlook because he can, like you said, score the ball. He can get his own shot. He can get your team into their set. Only problem is just I don't know where a lot of playing time is for him when everybody's healthy. Now, I do think it'd be times where guys miss a game. You know, if Bogey is out, then I think you'll see him play more. You know, maybe if one of the wings is out, I think you'll see him play more. But, I mean, with them staggering Trey and DeJounte, you know, like when DeJounte's in the game, you're probably going to see Bogey in there with him and either Justin Holiday or AJ. Just look at me, it'll be AJ, but it's probably going to be Justin starting to see knowing Nate. I mean, I just don't think it's a lot of minutes for it because, you know, even though Bogey will be with the second unit, he'll still be able to play 26, 27, 28, you know, maybe 30 minutes even because, one, you know, say, for example, if Bogey comes in for DeJounte, and then when Trey says DeJounte comes back in and plays with Bogey, you know what I mean? So Bogey will kind of be playing with both units, you know what I mean, in a way. I think it's lovely to have that depth. I think he's certainly more than just an afterthought, but I just don't see where a lot of minutes are when everybody is healthy. But certainly I definitely like Aaron as a player. Like both of the Holiday brothers as players, honestly, but
yeah.
Like I said, I also like our younger guys, you know, AJ, these guys, but I really do think we have a lot of talent, and I think now there was a stretch in that game where, like you said, it was too much one-on-one play, and to be honest with you, it was really DeJounte at that point, because it was really boy, Trey was on the bench when that big run in the second quarter happened. And DeJounte was on the floor. John was on the floor, along with the Kongu and a couple of, you know, some of the bench guys. But I'll tell you what, though, man. For some reason, I don't understand why. It's just some Hawks fans have it out for John Collins because, you know, I get on there and I see, well, Hawks are minus 12 with John Collins on the floor and they're plus this with him off the floor. I'm like, well, wait a minute now. I was in there watching the game, and yeah, John was on the floor during that cold stretch, but it wasn't like he was missing shots. It wasn't his man that scored. And then in the beginning of the third quarter, when they cut an 18-point lead to three, J. So to be posting about the Hawks are minus with him in the game, like he was some kind of reason.
You just gotta ignore it. That's what I do now. This is the same thing as I ignore the people who hate the other guy that I'm about to talk about now, Jalen Johnson. People hate the man for some reason. And even after last night, showing again what he can do with giving some actual minutes. He had 22 minutes. He had 8 points, 11 boards, and he was out there passing the ball, running the floor, all the things that you need where we didn't have it last year depth-wise. You see what I'm saying? And we watched the two games before this where Frank the Tank was playing and getting all those minutes. And that's why I on one page I actually asked the question. So, do you want to have Frank the Tank getting 22 minutes a night, or would you rather have Jalen Johnson get 22 minutes a night? There's only one right answer to this, okay? you know what I'm saying? And now, I wasn't able to get a lot of highlights of last night from Jalen's point, but I want people to kind of look just the eye test a little bit. Now, on the radio, you won't be able to see it, but you'll be able to hear it a little bit. But give me a little bit of leeway here. I'm going to play a little coverage here.
Keaton Savage tries the reverse. Does not work. And now Langston Galloway to Johnson. That reverse on the other end is true. Georges Hunt across the timeline midway through the opening quarter. Catch and shoot. Galloway, ring it up. Johnson in the post to Georges Hunt. Nicely done against King. Barber and Galloway, the veteran backcourt. It's the young gun that comes up with that one and puts it in. He'll look to attack Lewis King. Johnson takes the contact and scores. His hit, no call. Savage nearly picked it off. Barber picks it up, and there is Johnson late down the floor.
He was getting some burns, some minutes, creative plays, sort of like what he was doing down here in the G League, so that was nice to see.
Johnson set up for three.
Johnson can run the floor. He can rebound, he can pass, he can hit a jumper, he can hit a three. He can do all the things that you would want a big to do and do it at a high level. Again, you don't just do 21, 11, and 4 assists all season in G League and not be able to actually do that in real life. And he's shown that every time he's gotten some actual NBA minutes, he has shown he can do all of those things if given the opportunity. But still you got people who say, oh, he can't play, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, where do you not see this? You know what I'm saying? So it's like, why do you just personally hate this young man who can do all the things that you really need out of your big out there on the floor? And again, at the end of the day, he's better than Frank the Tank. He's just better. It's just in all those aspects right there. But he also gives you energy. if you can't tell that, I don't know what you're looking at as well. So, again, one of the things that we lost on last year was a lack of depth at skill positions to give you more. We needed more last year, and he gives you that. And the Holiday brothers give you that. You know, so I just feel that we have a real nice mix this year. I believe that this team is a top four team in the East possibly. You know, going into this season, with Murray being here, a healthy John Collins who's going to, again, get him 15 shots a game. Let's see. Let's just see. Because, again, the last two seasons, he got 14 or more shots a season. For this Atlanta Hawks team, he gave you 19-9 and 21-10. He's playing on your Atlanta Hawks team and did that. And some people don't know that for some reason because they don't watch Hawks basketball. I don't understand that. But that's a whole other story. They just hate, you know, John Collins. That's, you know, Jordan just said that, right? So, again, when you look at it just from that angle, I think the Hawks are poised to have a great season. It's going to be exciting. I'm excited. My first game is Orlando Magic this year. So I can't wait. It's been a while since I've been to a basketball game, frankly, with all the crazy stuff that has happened, you know, over the last couple of years. There is the 21st. The Orlando Magic is next Friday, actually. So you'll see me in Atlanta for the first time in a while. I'll try to do some live broadcasts out there if I can. We'll see. Any other points on the Hawks preseason so far, Jordan?
Well, just one last point on the question you have on the screen. Why do you hate Jalen Johnson? And it's just a good question. Why do you hate Jalen Johnson? Because, I mean, when you look at even just last year, we know he didn't get, you know, major minutes very many times, but there were three games that he saw 15 minutes or more in. In those three games, he had 7 rebounds in 2 of those 3 games. You know what I mean? So he had 2 different 7 rebound games out of those 3 games. In those 3 games, he had double figure scoring in 2 of those 3 games. I mean, so just a small sample size showing you that the kid has some ability. I mean, this is a guy who the G League coach referred to as a mini LeBron last year. So, you know, why you wouldn't be rooting for this guy and, you know, why you don't see some talent level there, I don't know what's wrong. You know, they have to suggest some eye surgery or something.
They got blinders on, Jordan. Again, I don't understand it. When you can play, you can play. And when you have needs and you don't play them, it's just silly. So.
And then there again, he gets minutes on the preseason game and gets 11 rebounds, makes his only 3-point shot attempt. So I think that there's clearly some talent there. And I think Travis Schlenk and Landry Fields definitely see some talent there. Because to be honest with you, if not for Nathan Millen, I think Mo Harkless would probably still be here. But I truly believe that Landry and Travis knew that Nathan Millen was about to play Mo Harkless over Jalen Johnson. So they decided to go on and get Mo out of here because they believe in the potential of this.
Does make sense.
They want him to get minutes.
Does make sense. So guys, we got to wrap it up. We're about to end the show. I appreciate all those that listen. Looks like we got a couple listeners to watch the Hawks segment, so appreciate everybody watching the Atlanta Hawks segment just now. Make sure you follow IMTM Worldwide Radio on YouTube. Make sure you subscribe. Listen to all the shows on Spotify, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, and everything. And, of course, you can follow us on Twitter, IntellectATL, and Jordan23ATL. Jordan, your last word before we get off the air.
Well, man, as always, just enjoy covering all of our Atlanta sports. We'll talk to Mr. Freeman tomorrow. That should be very interesting in the mix of the Braves playoff run. I want to thank everybody, you know, who listened to us and who will listen to this after the fact on our podcast. We love our live listeners and callers, but we also love our podcast-style listeners who catch us after the fact as well. You know, certainly want to thank you guys. And last but not least, as always, I want to thank God for giving me this breath that I breathe to talk about these anomalies.
All right, now until next time. Well, actually, the next time is going to be tomorrow afternoon, 1 o'clock. Make sure you're on the show because we got Marvin Freeman, former Atlanta Braves pitcher, is going to be on the show. So make sure you tune in tomorrow afternoon at 1 and listen to that great interview. Till next time, y'all take care. Peace.